Welcome back. Monday, hour number three. Mitchell Henderson is back tonight. And I tell you, every day, I don't see anything that makes me think that World War III is necessarily off the table or back up on the shelf at all. I see Trump or his organization or his controllers, however you want to phrase it, saying things that, what? He didn't say that yesterday. It doesn't sound to me like there's going to be any real peace between the U.S. and Russia. I mean, how could there be when we are literally making the Ukraine war possible and the genocide in Gaza possible and Israeli military mischief, I'll be really polite, in many other locations? It's not good out there. And now with this issue of Iran, Iran today announced that they have, I think they were saying they may reveal what it is tomorrow. I don't know. But they have some new technology. Now, this could be very interesting. Remember the Oreshnik missile in Russia that was used one time, and it sent shockwaves through the American military industrial complex. Believe it, and the Pentagon as well, of course. That missile is absolutely awesome and years ahead of anything we have. It uses apparently kinetic warheads. They're not explosives. They're kinetic. Let's call them titanium or something of that nature. And they come in at such velocity that they cause worse damage than explosive warheads. All right? And there are 10 of them on a missile, something like that, maybe more. So anyhow, technology is interesting. Mitchell, welcome back. Is it peace or is it war? War.
Oh, it's definitely, it is definitely war. Okay, it's definitely war. We're drifting towards it. It's just that the form that it may come in and what will trigger it. I think they're intentionally making that unpredictable. Okay, it could come on for many different reasons. We might end up it might be something sparks it that we wouldn't even think that it was going to spark it. It could be a miscalculation. Okay,
or
somebody getting
flag.
Paranoid yeah. on one side or the other. Okay, so
I'll lean to false flag every time. Although
oh yeah, yeah.
Be,
well, listen, the thing is, it's my title tonight is peace and oppression, war and freedom. You see, during peace, before we get to war, there's a lot of oppression, and what they do is they want you to follow the events every day, because that's part of the disorientation, because disorientation is
it's a
good
process.
For control.
You betcha. Well
right.
said, and I'm
it's
glad
good
you
for
mentioned
control.
That.
Okay.
It is absolutely essential.
So,
right.
My title looks a little weird. It says War and Freedom. Okay, so let me tell you, explain the context of that first, okay? Let me do an analogy. So I spent several years of my life as a completely homeless person, okay? Not just sort of functionally homeless, but actually homeless. Living under bridges, Skid Row, that kind of stuff, okay? I started when I was 14, and I quit being homeless, I think, by the time I was 23, okay? And I spent a few years in there in the Army, and I wasn't homeless in the Army. But when before I went in the Army and after I got out of the Army, I spent some time homeless. So when I got out of the Army, it was sort of a voluntary homelessness, because what I did is just hitchhiked around the country and,
Well, that's actually education, when you think about it now.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't fun.
So one of the things about homelessness is freedom, okay? Homelessness is freedom, because your home and your possessions tie you down. They cause you to be regulated. So when you're homeless, there's not a certain time you got to get up. There's not a certain time you got to be anywhere. You don't have to do anything at any time. You eat when you want to. You do whatever you want when you want to. You don't have to get home, because home is just wherever you're at. Okay, so there's no getting home or anything. The thing is you have all this freedom, but what you don't have is you don't have comfort. You don't have luxury. Okay, these things you don't have. But and you might not even have entertainment unless you consider the people around you to be entertainment. And actually, they are kind of, they can be very entertaining, actually.
Got it.
So now, war is the same thing, okay? Just as having a home can be oppression and being homeless is freedom, peace can be oppressive and war is freedom, okay? I have never felt more alive or more free than when there was war, okay? You have freedom in war.
Interesting. Spoken like a true combat veteran. Fascinating.
Okay, you're just free. There's just not a lot. Listen, if you're in a situation where you're allowed to kill, you're as free as you can get, okay? There is no more freedom than that, all right? Of course, it can happen to you, too. You have to keep that in mind. So it's not,
yes,
it's not something that's going to be one
the,
way. Right?
Shelf. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So what I want to do is I want to kind of relate this to going through life. I'm going to kind of put it in the context of humor a little bit, because actually in war and violence, you can find a lot of humor, and sometimes there is no humor in peace, okay? So this is like a meta-analysis of humor in different societies at different times, okay? And then we can get some indicators about how oppressed society can be. So people in an oppressed society do not have a sense of humor. For example, we just spent 4 years in a Marxist woke society under the pedophile Biden regime where humor was dead and stale. And they even called it the death of comedy at the time. Okay?
I haven't seen
you
a
You just
funny,
couldn't make a joke about anything.
In years, yes.
Yeah. So we just had the 50th anniversary of Saturday Night Live. The early skits were kind of funny. In 1975, Dan Aykroyd opened Saturday Night Live with a skit of him acting like Jimmy Carter. I'm not quoting exactly. This is just from memory, so I'm just sort of generalized. But he said, "My fellow Americans, how would you like to live in a $10 million home, drive a million-dollar car, and smoke $10,000 cigars? With inflation, we can all have these things." Okay, so this was humor because everybody was suffering from inflation under Carter, so everyone could relate to it. America is so divided now that only the woke Marxist liberals can relate to Saturday Night Live or The Daily Show. It is not
well, that's
funny
what the last 4 years were
reality.
About. We're splitting this, fragmenting this culture into it can't be real. It's like Humpty Dumpty. You're not going to put it back together.
Yeah.
Not like it was.
So they decide in this 50-year thing that the best skit in somewhat current times was a skit called More Cowbells. Why? Well, it had nothing to do with politics. It was about the music industry, and it was only funny because Christopher Walken made it funny. Okay, it wasn't the Saturday Night Live guys that actually made it interesting, okay? So in 2004, example, Will Ferrell, this is Saturday Night Live, used a little language comedy in his Anchorman movement, but even it was a little mean. The news people all went out to a Mexican restaurant called Escupimos en su comida, which means we spit in your food. I thought it was funny, but it was meant as a put-down to white people who probably did not even notice it. Most people that have seen that show do not know about the name of the Mexican restaurant they went to. But the name of the restaurant was We Spit in Your Food. Hispanics that speak Spanish would get the joke, but there was no effort to translate it. Saturday Night Live humor is almost always deprecating to white people. It gets old.
How about defecating on white people?
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. So this past Saturday, Silent Life did an Easter skit with President Trump where they totally mocked Easter, Jesus Christ, the resurrection, and of course, Trump. Now, they did this last year at Easter, too. They made fun of Jesus last year. They say that Trump thinks, they say that Trump thinks he's the Messiah. Trump has said that he thinks he is the Jewish Messiah, which is not the same thing as saying Christ.
Because the
Jews' Messiah doesn't think that their Messiah is God. He's just a man, just a human. In Trump's first presidency, he really did not seem to understand even the basics of Christianity. He has been educated on that and now says all the right things that a Christian Zionist would want him to say. He still does not actually know Christ, as you can tell, by him appointing Paula White as his White House Faith Office Senior Advisor.
Oh, my.
James Dobson, of Focus on the Family, even says that White converted Trump to Christianity in 2016. Paula White is a prosperity gospel leader who has become rich off of her religious showmanship. And I would have to state the obvious here that both Trump and White's religion is a show. However, unlike his portrayal on Saturday Night Live this past Saturday, Trump knows not to say anything to upset his Christian Zionist followers. The Saturday Night Live Easter opening was a crude denigration of Christ and Christians. Keep in mind, they could never, ever make fun of Jews or Muslims. They could never do that. They can make fun of, terrorists or something, but they can't make fun of Islam. They would never do that. They cannot make fun of Judaism.
By the way,
but Christianity and white people is fair game, okay?
Oh, yeah. It's almost mandatory. Last Friday, David Oates was on, and I asked him to run Paula White through reverse speech.
Oh,
and you might want
cool.
to listen to that. I'll send you the file for it. She's
okay.
Awful.
Yeah, that sounds pretty interesting.
They're all frauds, all of them.
Yeah. So this survey that I'm going to give you is anecdotal because it comes from experience. And we're going to start by comparing language jokes. So in 1975, I had a boat in British Honduras. Cheech and Chong comedy routines were popular at the time. So I took some German tourists out in my boat to go to the reefs off the coast and snorkel and spearfish. The five German guys were talking away in German. After a while, one apologized to me for just speaking German. And I remembered some Cheech and Chong jokes on it. And I said, well, I speak some German. And he said, oh, okay, well, go ahead. And I said, machine guns, the lifeboats, kills the Americaners fine. And sign the paper, old man, or we will kill the girl. Okay. Well, there's a flat effect. There's nothing. Okay. They just were like, what are you talking about? Okay. They did not understand anything. So there was no humor there. So in 1976, I was traveling with a Dutch couple in Guatemala. There were some girls hitchhiking, and the Dutch guy said that they looked like French girls. I thought they looked American. So I said, pull up, I speak some French. He pulled up and I did the Cheech and Chong thing again. I said, bonjour, mademoiselles, parlez-vous a humma humma. But they just looked kind of shocked and was like, there was no humor, no recognition of humor. But then again, maybe Cheech and Chong was not big in Europe at the time. But I bring up these two situations, okay, but actually I never, ever found any Europeans in those days that laughed about anything, okay? Just not. It was like the Americans in the past, the woke Americans of the past 4 years, that nothing was funny to them, okay? So this is just kind of how it is. There just wasn't any humor. They were humorless and serious people. Even when drunk, they could not have a good time. Europe in the 1960s and 70s was a woke Marxist society, a society the American elites wanted to emulate. By the 2000s, we were there in America. At least half of us were in Wokeville. Okay. Later in 1976, I was living in Honduras. I had a good friend that was a test pilot in the Honduran Air Force. Honduras was ruled by a military government under General Melgar Castro. He took power after a military coup against President Lopez Arellano in 1975. What is important to remember is that this was not a Marxist, liberal, or progressive government. This was a military dictatorship. There was no woke oppression of the people. One Saturday night, we went out to a nightclub in Tegucigalpa. It was all sorts of military officers, mostly senior officers who held positions in the military junta. After we were good and wasted, they played a song that was very popular at the time. And I'm going to say the song to you in Spanish and tell you what it means. So the song goes, hay una piedra en el camino que me dijo que mi destino era rogar y rogar, rogar y rogar. And it means, there is a stone in the road that told me that my destiny was to ramble on and ramble on, like a vagabond, you know? So I started singing, only I sang. I said, hay una piedra en el camino que me dijo que mi destino era rogar y rogar. Robar y robar. It sounds similar, but it means there is a bitch in the road that told me that my destiny was to rob and to rob, to rob and to rob. So a few colonels looked at me quizzically for a moment and then started laughing. I did this on purpose just to mess with them. Soon the whole bar was singing along in chorus my version of the song. Okay.
Well,
so what do we have here? We've got a military dictatorship where people have a sense of humor, okay? Because although society is controlled, and that means criminals are controlled, okay, the people are free to have a good time, you know? So you're going to see this, going on. So in 1989, I was in a bar in David, Panama, about a month before the U.S. Invasion. Noriega was the military dictator. People commonly called Noriega Cara Pina, which means pineapple face. The poor and working class actually loved Noriega. He was very popular with the poor people, okay? So I acted like the naive gringo and innocently asked a big guy in the bar in Spanish, who is Cara Pinga? Okay? Carapenga means dick face, okay? So far from being offended, this group of working class people who love Noriega started laughing and repeating Carapenga. It caught on fast, okay? So there was a sense of humor there, even a self-deprecating sense of humor.
That's fine.
Okay?
Yes,
so compare their free minds to the dead soul, humorless minds of the Europeans they had dealt with before. These Europeans had easy lives, coming from a woke European society, okay, as opposed to the harsh life of these people under the military dictatorship. Now, the military dictatorship is not making their life difficult, okay. If anything, they're keeping the bad actors from disturbing the lives of the people, okay. So I had even worked in Chile in 1984 when Pinochet was the dictator of Chile. You would think that I was not free. It was not free at all if you listened to U.S. press at the time. In fact, you could tell immediately that you were very free from crime. Criminals were not free and not protected under the military dictatorship like they are in liberal democracies. One Saturday when I was in Arica, Chile, I wanted to just go chill at the beach near the Pacific Ocean. There were some very nice and classy bars on the coast, right on the water. So I went into a place that looked out on the ocean. The people were happy, laid back, and they were all smoking joints. There was no beach bar in the liberal democracy of the United States of America could just legally smoke a joint while you were having drinks. There was no bar in America you could do that without worrying about getting arrested. But under the dictatorship of
Pinochet,
Augusto Pinochet in Chile, you could smoke a joint on the bar in the beach. Not that it was legal, but that the government wasn't there to bother you. The government existed to bother Marxists, to bother criminals, not
that's why they
the
marked
average
him.
Person.
That's why Pinochet was tailed, tagged, and labeled.
Yeah.
They did a good job here of smearing him. Boy, they did. I remember.
Yes. So what was it about military dictatorships that you could have fun, relax, and enjoy yourself? They were not Marxist oppressive ideological countries. They were stridently anti-Marxist, and there was no Marxist puritanism to contend with. There were also few criminals to bother you. Military dictatorships do not tolerate criminals that bother you. In 1991, I was in Guatemala, and the war was in full swing. Violence was everywhere, and it was intimate. The military government of General Humberto Mejia gave way to an elected president named Cerezo Herrero. The government had to respect human rights to be sanctioned in order to, or be sanctioned by the United States. Human rights means that criminals and Marxists are protected people. But this was not peace and oppression. It was an anarchist mess. It was war and freedom because you were on your own. You had to take care of yourself.
Gotcha.
There was an inefficiency of violence. One day I was going towards the Ministry of Defense, and the Marxist guerrillas decided to attack the defense minister. They threw grenades and blasted away with machine guns. I noticed that just about everybody except the Minister of Defense got hit, and he was out in the open. I was thinking they must have been trained by the United States, okay, these terrorists. So the President of Mexico and the President of Guatemala were flying into the airport together. They were to arrive at 4 p.m. At 4 p.m., I was down by the presidential palace on a payphone talking to my wife. At 4 p.m., a series of car bombs went off in quick succession. I put the phone out so my wife could hear the explosions. Of course, the two presidents were safe at the airport at 4 o'clock, but the terrorists set the bombs for 4 o'clock at the presidential palace. It takes about an hour to get from the airport to the presidential palace. Like I said, we must have trained these guys, okay? They just were not good at what they did.
Gotcha.
So Guatemala was in a state of general warfare at the time. Crime was out of control. Robberies and kidnappings were frequent, like 2 to 4 times an hour wherever you might be. You would definitely see it. The violence was inescapable. My wife was with me when I was in Guatemala during this time, and I talked to her. It's like we were just walking downtown, and she tugged my arm, and she turned around and looked at this guy on the bench, and I looked around, and she said, "He's looking at us." So we stood there and looked at him, okay? The thing was is that in violent times, if somebody's paying attention to you, they're sizing you up as a victim. And the best thing to do is stop and look at them, even approach them, okay?
Really? Face them down a little bit. Interesting.
Yeah, they want to. They're like any predator. They want to attack you when you're unaware, and they have the advantage.
Yeah, they don't want their cover.
So, So down at the bar, the locals began telling me jokes. I will tell you this one in English, okay? Because it's very fitting for the time. The president. This is the joke. So the presidents of Mexico, Guatemala, and the USA were in Maine. They got on a plane to fly to Guatemala City. After a while, President Bush put his hand out the window and said, "We are over New York City." The other president asks how he knew. Bush said, "I just touched the top of the Empire State Building." After a while, the president, Salinas de Gortari of Mexico, stuck his hand out the window and said, "We are now over Mexico City." The other president asked how he knew, and he said, "I just touched the top of the Torre Latino America," which is Mexico City's tallest building. After a short while later, President Cerezo Herrero of Guatemala stuck his hand out the window and said, "We are now over Guatemala City." The other two presidents were wondering how he knew, since there were no skyscrapers in Guatemala City. They asked how he knew. The president of Guatemala said, "Somebody stole my watch."
That's
good. So right. We're now seeing the woke Marxist leaders of Europe freaking out. Their peoples are getting tired of the Marxist oppression that is impoverishing them.
Look at the AfD in Germany. If it was left its own devices, it would already be in control. But they're calling them Nazis now because they're German nationalists for all. That's all they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're proud of country, proud of people, proud of culture. That makes you a Nazi. Yeah,
that's right.
Awful.
So in Romania, they have canceled the results of the first election and threw its main vote-getter, the right-wing Calin Georgescu, in prison. In France, they put their most popular candidate, right-wing Marine Le Pen, in prison for 4 years and made her ineligible to run for president.
That's
in Germany, the right-wing Alternative for Germany, who has the most votes than any other party, will not be invited into the government of the CDU's Friedrich Merz, who regards them as Nazis. Because of this, the European nations, especially France and United Kingdom, as well as Germany and Romania, desperately want war with Russia so that they can stay in power. The right wing is against war. Romania is critical because the EU intends to launch World War III from Romania. They talk about this in European press. Okay, Romania is where they're gearing up to initiate this war with Russia. Okay, so think about it. The right-wing countries of Europe don't want this war. That's Hungary, Slovakia, Serbia, okay? Even Italy, Meloni does not want to go to war with Russia. She thinks that's a crazy idea. Okay.
So who does that
leave? Dictatorships always
Macron
like to start wars when they're...
The French and the Poles. The French and the Poles.
Yes.
And a couple others. That's about it.
Well, Lithuania, Estonia, and Latvia, they all want war. They're insane. They'll be crushed like a bug. They want war. They're a curse upon their own people, you know. But dictatorships always like to start wars when they're in danger of losing power. Even leftist dictatorships do this. Joe Biden was trying to do it. You can see the intense propaganda campaign to talk the Europeans and Canadians into giving up their lives and the lives and well-being of their families and loved ones to have a war against Russia. The progressive Marxists are so hell-bent on destroying the white race and Christianity that they will do anything they can to start World War III with Russia. I do not think Trump wants to go along with it. Europe and Zelensky will try to get Russia to attack NATO, a NATO nation, so they can suck Trump into it. There's no guarantee Trump will go along with it. In the meantime, Russia keeps advancing and keeps degrading the Ukrainian army. They will try to do it by the inevitability of gradualism and incrementalism in order to avoid sending off a general war like Israel is doing. Are they going to do it that way? Or will Russia break out into a general invasion? In May, when the ground is solid, take everything east of the Dnieper and take Mykolaiv and Odessa Oblast along the Black Sea. Will they do that? The Russians are massing troops to do this now. For the next week, it will be dry and sunny with temperatures above 70 degrees and lows above 50 degrees at night. Soon the ground will be solid. You see, now all armor has to stick to the roads, which channelizes and makes it vulnerable to attack. That's why all the ground that you see gained has to be gained by infantry, because they can't take armored vehicles across those fields. They can only go on the roads. They need solid ground so that the armor can disperse and have more mobility and not channeled into a few obvious avenues of approach.
I have seen a few videos of the Ukraine invasion of Russia in Kursk and other places, of APCs, of tanks, just being blown to pieces by roadside bombs, IEDs, mines, tank anti-tank mines, etc. And I mean, I don't know how anybody could survive that. And yet, I see some of the APCs that get hit hard. I see the troops inside trying, you know, one at a time, they come running out of the back, somehow blew a hole there, and then they get hunted down by FPV drones that are run by Ukrainian operators, and they just blow these people up one at a time, pick them off. It's really ugly warfare over there. People don't know, or most people don't.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, the Ukrainians are just senselessly wasting people's lives and stuff.
They're killers. Whoever's leading that military, they are really psychopathic killers, the Ukrainian military.
Oh, yeah. They have no mercy. They haven't got any human heart at all. How can you have the heart to make your men just run into the guns and get killed? You know that they're going to die for sure, but you make them go do it anyway. Okay. This is not, the leadership of Ukraine just disgusts me. These are not even human beings. These are monsters in the Ukrainian government, okay? But, I mean, you can see even now, you can see Zelensky making things, oh, we're going to fight to the end, and we're going to gain things back. We just need the Europeans to come in here and help us and stuff. And, Trump has been trying to work with them. But listen, Ukraine sabotages everything that they agree. They made an agreement weeks ago about not hitting each other's fuel and infrastructure, and the Ukrainians just totally ignore it. You know, they
correct.
Don't want
yeah.
peace. They want
no.
war. Listen, yeah. they've got this cash cow going that's putting money in Zelensky and his cronies' pockets.
How
lots
much?
Of
billions
money.
And billions.
Billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And so they do not want this to stop. This is the
no.
biggest scam that anybody could ever possibly run, and all it costs is the lives of other human beings. That's all it costs to get these billions of dollars, okay? So the Europeans, you know, these liberal, leftist, progressive Europeans who would never themselves even defend themselves in a fist fight, they
right.
want to send their young people off to war.
I know.
And I want to warn the American people right now, you know, if you want to know who's behind the tactics, the strategy, the operational art that is sending these Ukrainian men to their death by the hundreds of thousands,
and
it is
women.
Your American generals that are running this war.
Yes.
Guess what? If we go to war, guess who they're going to be sending to their certain death? Your children will be sent to their certain death.
Yeah.
Our military leaders don't have a heart for human lives, not even American human lives. You see them throwing away lives in Ukraine right now. They will throw your children's lives away also. So thank goodness. I don't think Trump is totally uninterested in getting into this war. Totally uninterested. I think he would leave the Europeans in the lurch. I think if the Europeans provoke a Russian attack on European country, I
uh-huh.
think the United States would just say, yeah, you're on your own. And we should say, you're on your own. You know, we have taken
well
care of these
time.
People for 50 years.
It's yes. well past time. That's right. Yeah.
Yes. We've yeah. taken care of them for so long. We've subsidized them for so long. We need to start taking care of Americans, you know.
No,
unfortunately.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah,
but
we got to
right.
take care of Israel and Israelis. That's
it.
The most important thing, right?
That's right.
So that's what we're going to do. Now, Trump, I think he really would prefer to have an agreement with the Iranians. But let me just tell you to the point: no matter what kind of face or anything that Netanyahu makes as he's sitting there, Netanyahu is intent. It is essential for Netanyahu to drag the United States into a war with Iran.
Correct.
Israel dragged us into a war with Iraq, with Sudan, with Libya, with Somalia, with Afghanistan. They got to get us into a war with Iran. That is, it's on their list of
yeah.
things to do.
Yeah.
Iran is the final one.
Yeah.
And they want us to go in there and create hot chaos in Iran. So, you know, to see how the timing of that is even for me, it's kind of difficult to see the timing of that, to see how that will come down. So all I can say is that's going to probably be kind of a surprise, but whenever they say that that America is going to launch an attack on Iran, You need to start watching, because you may have to run. Okay, that war can spiral out of control very quickly. Okay, so the general rule is this: if Israel attacks Iran on their own, there probably won't be World War III. But if American forces cross into Iranian airspace,
they're going in.
There will be World War III.
Yeah, I believe they're going right in. And they got the B-2s there, nine of them. I mean, come on, they've been sitting, waiting, twiddling their thumbs for a couple of weeks now. Yeah, I think it's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
This new agreement
was
just signed by Russia and Iran Friday. But it doesn't unequivocally force Russia to militarily respond if Ukraine is attacked. It stops just short of that. So Putin gave himself an out. I don't know why they're playing games.
Well, you know, what that is, Jeff, that's what we do, too. It's strategic ambiguity, okay? It's much more valuable to leave the enemy guessing than it is to give them a solid foundation for their decision-making, okay? We don't want to make it too easy they don't want to make it too easy for us to come to a decision, okay? Because remember, China has said that they will not tolerate America crushing Iran. They're not going to do it. Not only that, but, you know, when we just see this country on a map and we think we can crush them, I've told you about how big their military is, how big their society is, and you know, Americans, you're not looking at a country where everybody's sitting around, oh, we're oppressed and we need to be freed from our tormentors. That's not happening. What's happening in Iran is people are getting married, having kids, going to the job, improving their house, going out for dinner with their friends. I mean, you know what you do here in America? That's what the people in Iran are doing. They're not sitting over there waiting to be liberated from their government. You know, this is some fiction that our government tells us, but this is not true.
Nonstop.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, we're there's other things we're told. We're told that, well, the Iranians just the Iranian people hate us with a passion and stuff. You know, this is sort of remarkable. But even with all the stuff you hear in the press going back, the hatred between the United States and Iran calling us the great Satan and stuff, the people in Iran do not sit around talking about, oh, well, we really hate the Americans.
They're all striving to be middle class like we used to be. And they want to have homes, jobs. They want security. It's just people.
They want to send their kids off to college so they can have a good career. You know, they can have a nice home. You know, maybe a beach home on the Caspian Sea. I don't think the Persian Gulf is a very beachy place for them, but you know, they're going to the beaches, the Caspian Sea. It's not the Arabian Sea or the Gulf because it's way too hot down there for them. So, anyways,
well, we have another carrier over there now. I'm waiting to see if any of these Iranian anti-ship missiles score a hit. I've seen them claim attacks on escort ships, destroyers, supply, whatever, part of the strike group, the carrier strike group, and I never have heard one of these anti-ship missiles hit, not one. We wouldn't be told anyway if they could hide it, but I wonder if you've heard of anything. Have there been any hits?
Dozens of firings. The news over there says that they do hit. They even show pictures of them hitting.
I've seen pictures, but everyone says, AI.
But listen, it's like over here, I remember back in the first Trump administration where he sent 72 missiles into Syria to blow places up. And the American press and just said that all 72 missiles hit the target. But then when I looked at the French press, France 24 News, the French admitted that they fired seven cruise missiles and they all ditched in the Mediterranean. They out and out just said they didn't hit a target. They went down in the Mediterranean. So then the Turkish news said that really, I think they said that two or three of them actually hit. And then the Kurdish news, it's against the Turks and against the Syrians. So I looked at their news, and they said, yeah, hardly any of those missiles hit, okay? But we were told here in America that all 72 missiles hit their target because America never fails. But wake up, people. America fails.
We failed in Afghanistan.
Just think about this. Mm-hmm. In Afghanistan, we were not fighting a superpower. we were fighting some illiterate goat farmers that had no superpower support at all. And right. those people won against the strongest country in the world. And the reason they won is because we don't live in reality. We were going to take Afghanistan, perhaps the most backwards, traditional Islamic society in the world. We were going to make them a modern liberal democracy. We were actually pouring billions of dollars, sending all kinds of advisors over there to do this thing. We were going to transform their society into a modern liberal democracy. Well, that just wasn't ever going to happen at all, and we were totally in this dream world thinking that that would happen, okay? One of the things that held us up is we had our army, every operation we did had to go through lawyers. Lawyers with no military training at all.
They
got to approve our missions and stuff. It was insane, okay? And then we had all these, it was just unimaginable things, Jeff, like some guys are out on the front lines, like we're talking about straight leg infantry, just out on the front lines, grunts, in combat with the Taliban, calling for field artillery support, and the field artillery support said, well, no, we're denying you coverage. What? What? You're calling for field artillery support, and they tell you no? Where are these people's heads at? Look at the final days in Afghanistan. They're not allowed to shoot people that they know are strapped with bombs. Come on. I mean, where are these people? Political correctness and virtual signaling the maximum.
Where did this theory that you could fight a war not to win and expect to win, I come from? I don't get it.
It's just
weird.
Exactly what I've been talking about tonight.
You have been.
Is that you see the difference, there's two ways you can run a country. You can have the government go out and stop political criminals. Let's say that political criminals are Marxists, and you can have them stop street criminals, robbers, rapers, murderers, stuff like that. If the government actually protects the criminals and protects the Marxists, then what kind of country do you live in? I don't have to ask this question. What kind of country did we live in under the pedophile Biden regime? That is what it's like. This crime. I mean, you could watch on the news. Oh, these guys robbed this store and shot the clerk to death and stuff, and raped a little girl on the way out the door. You could count on those guys being back on the street within a few days. Okay,
that's true.
That's a judge letting them go, and then you hear about, oh, this guy was arrested for murdering this guy. He was already out on the street after being released after murdering somebody else. Okay, I mean, we have a government that protects them.
Mm-hmm. Did you hear about the black kid that knifed in the heart the white kid at a track meet? Did you hear about that?
Well, yeah, it's obvious.
He got out on $250,000 bond today. And his family set up a GoFundMe page. Now, this is observed and witnessed by the brother, anyway, and others.
Yeah.
He got out on bond today.
Yeah.
He didn't have to put a penny up. It was all his GoFundMe apparently racked up over $300,000 by the time the judge agreed to let this guy out on the street. Just let him go till his trial.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Look at our news now. We got this. There's a citizen of El Salvador that was shipped back to El Salvador. This Kilbar guy from Maryland. I mean, the liberal media, the Marxists in our country, they just gush over, oh, we got to get this man back. He was so unjustly sent overseas. The only reason they want him back is to. You know, it's, listen, anything to protect the evil people, anything that you can do to protect the evil people. And the reason why is because it's back to that cognitive bad people, evil people, Marxists that have rights. If you're a hard-working, regular, everyday American, you don't have any rights. You can shut up, and if you complain about it, we will crush you like a bug. You're the bad people.
It's true.
The bad people are the good people. That they need our patience.
Black is white,
they
up
need
is
to
down.
Be cared for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's sickening, almost.
It is. It's
the way that they protect them. You know, it's like, it's on the other hand, when are Americans going to get tired of it? When are they going to get tired of being treated
honestly,
by their own government?
En masse, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think that they can really exercise any kind of reaction against it much anymore. They've been beaten down and lied to so much, there's not much left.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't think so. I don't think we have it anymore as a people, as a culture. We're used to being oppressed, and we've accepted it. The old expression, better to die a hero than live on your knees. I think most Americans are not of that mindset anymore at all. I don't see it.
Oh, they'll live on their knees. Yeah. So, but, it's also what their experience is what they have. They're prepared for it. It's like, you know, I had the experience of being homeless and living on the street and stuff. It had its perks. It's a very free lifestyle. Okay,
I understand.
But the problem is you don't get all the luxury, and everybody's really selling out for luxury. Think about if our society falls apart. Okay, those homeless people you see out there on the street, you know, it's just going to be a little ripple for them. Think how it's going to be for your average person that lives in a house that has somewhat of a life of some sort. Okay, it's just to them it's inconceivable that they'd be without certain commodities and stuff. Okay, it's almost like a mindset. It's like. You know, see, the average person's thinking is, well, I have to go get a job to get some money to buy food, to buy shelter, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So, but I've been a homeless person. My mind doesn't think like that. Okay. In other words, I can get food and I can get shelter without money. I don't need money to get those things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I can, if I have money and I have income, I can have a nicer home, and I can have easier food that's more to my liking. Okay, but you know what? When it comes to necessity, you don't need money to get the necessities. But see, they've created a mindset, they've created a culture where everybody thinks that they need money in order to get the things that they need to live. They can get us to get a chip in our arm to have that money flowing.
You know you know how they can do it? They can sell universal basic income on that very basis. If they want a chip, most people would line up. Let's say they got paid $2,500 a month cash, universal basic income, if you'll take a chip.
Well, let me give you a surprising statistic. If you go out there to the street to the homeless people, do you know how many of them will line up to get a chip so that they can have a basic income? I don't think you'll have very many takers.
No, I think that it's funny how that independent mindset would maybe appear more often in them. You're right. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Interesting. I like that. All right, my man. That was a good hour.
Yeah,
as
it's
always.
Just how it is. Okay.
Yeah, it is. It is. All right, we'll talk to you next time, and be safe out there, Mitch.
Okay.
Great job. Keep it up.
Okay, you too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody. Have a good week.
Mitchell Henderson, the unique mind, so totally steeped in pragmatic approaches to almost everything. He's been there. He's done it. You don't get that kind of wisdom out of a box of cereal or from a cell phone. Back in 21 hours, tomorrow. Take care, and we'll talk then.